Welcome to another episode of Final Cut Grill. This is 018 with Michael Garber. I got to say, I'm really excited to share this conversation with you. I just spoke with Michael earlier tonight. This is Thursday night. It's late. I've been, you know, editing and polishing the show and pulling out some of the little mistakes we made. We also had some Skype issues, but, you know, that's my issue. Michael's a very articulate, very interesting guy. He's been using Final Cut for a couple of years. I really want to encourage you, especially on this episode, go to the Digital Cinema Cafe website and click on the, I think it's the left-hand side, there's a little thing that says Final Cut Grill, and you can find the show notes to the show. There's some really interesting links and some stuff too that Michael is talking about. He's also going to share with us a snapshot of his folder structure, which I'm just a geek about, and I might actually have other people share that because I think it's a fun way to sort of see the way people work. At any rate, Michael is fascinating, and you're going to enjoy this interview. Before we get to the interview, I just want to say a couple of things. One, I am genuinely amazed at some of the comments that I get on the iTunes, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. Though, when you go to iTunes and search for the show and click on the comments and review and comments and review the show, it really helps the show be seen by more people. And I want to thank you for doing that. Also, I don't think there's going to be a second show this weekend. I'm actually literally packed up. I can't put any more shows on the server. I won't go into all those details, but it's a bit of an issue, and we'll have to wait until apparently after the 4th of February, I think, is when I can put up another show. Someday I'll explain all of that. But so I just wanted to let you know about that. We're going to take there will not be a Monday show this week. So that's enough of the little businessy stuff. And now we're going to go to Michael Garber from The Garber Shop. So, Michael Garber, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing better now that we finally got through all that technical crap.
I'm just happy to be here. It's been a while. We met last month, and I was really looking forward to talking to you.
So. Yeah, no, it's been fun. Yeah, that's right. You got on the my little disaster D+ test, didn't you?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this doesn't seem so hard. No, it's a lot harder than I thought.
Yeah, those
Google guys are too damn smart. They make it too hard for us mere mortals to play in their sandbox.
That's right. That's right. That's just one more in the on the plus side for Apple, I guess, and one more minus for,
right,
for Google.
But bottom line is, if Google ever makes a nonlinear editor, run away.
That said, as I'm cradling my Android phone right now and telling it to that I love it so much, so
so it doesn't crash on you.
Exactly.
Yeah, those things are tempting. So tell me about what kind of work you do, Michael.
Well, I do a lot of different work. I'm a bit all over the map these days. I work in commercials, and I work in documentaries and corporate documentaries. I work in TV. I'm kind of entertainment agnostic, I guess. Or
I
work
you.
Agnostic. Yeah. I've never quite found my niche, so I do lots of different stuff. And a lot of that is because in a way, I see it all as the same.
Yeah, no, I think I used to call it having a wide hat rack, you know, like, mm-hmm, I wear many hats, so I have to have a lot of, you know, hats to hang up when I'm not doing that particular thing. But yeah, I think it's especially, you know, the way the economy has been the last few years, it's good to be able to, like, yeah, you know, jump off one boat when it looks like it's sinking and move to something else, you know, I mean, it's
exactly
important.
And I've had my own company for the past, oh gosh, 10 years. I started my company in 2004. It's called Fifth Wall.
Right.
So, yeah. So I've always been looking at, you know, what's the next job going to be? You know,
it
can be anything, really. I never really cared as long as it brought in money and I hopefully enjoyed doing what I was doing, which I've been lucky enough along the way that I have. So,
you know, even on a bad day, I mean, we get to play with cool tools.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
And I've said that for years. You give me the absolute worst day at work, and at least I got to sit behind a really cool Mac all day.
That's right. That's right. Except maybe for those days where I'm literally banging my head against my desk if something really broke. But those days, actually, I go back. Those days happened probably more like 10 years ago. Those days haven't been happening so much anymore.
Well, okay. So here's a good question for you. When did you get started? Tell me about your history of various systems that you've edited on.
Okay. So I'm going to go turn on the Wayback Machine here.
Peabody and what was the dog's name?
Yeah, Mr. Peabody, yeah.
Yeah.
They're doing a movie of that now.
I saw that. Now I'm freaking out because I realized I made a mistake. Peabody is the dog. What's the boy's name?
Oh, man. Are you going to make me go online?
You talk, I'll Google.
Peabody and Sherman. Peabody and Sherman. Yeah.
Okay, autofill.
Mr. Peabody. Just a side note, it killed me that the voice is so different. I mean, he's got a British accent, but he doesn't sound like the original voice. And I love cartoons and voiceovers and everything.
Takes us back.
And then
doesn't it?
My friend reminded me, who's a writer, and he said, you know, none of the kids today even know about the original cartoon. This is all for a new audience, you realize, right? And I was like, yeah, you're right. Okay. Well,
yeah, it's true.
So, and then I'm okay with it now. But, so I started working back in high school. This was back in the 90s, the early to mid 90s, on tape-to-tape systems. And by that, I mean VHS to VHS
right.
decks. That was my first introduction to editing.
But it was awesome, wasn't it?
It was awesome because I could make my movies, my silly, stupid little movies, one shot at a time.
Yep.
And you could see it coming together. And there was something about building that was really magical. And even though all I dreamed of was an SVHS deck with, you know, with the flying erase head.
That is a phrase, flying erase head. That is a phrase that you have to be of a certain age to understand.
It's true. That really dates me more than being upset about the voice of Mr. Peabody. But so I did that throughout high school, and I did little high school videos, and I got a Videonics Direct Ed Plus, which literally, you know, I was a teenager and pretty hormonal, okay. And it literally did bring me to tears.
Okay, so for the younger set, I remember that box, but explain what the Videonics was.
Oh God, it was
what it was it? It was a
it was the devil. So it was a little box that had an IR adapter on it. I think you could have two IR adapters. I think you had to have two IR adapters, and it would control decks via IR. But you know, with VHS not having time code, mainly you had to rewind the tapes and start from scratch, and then it would just start its own counter. So there was no such thing as frame accuracy with this system. There may be minute accuracy.
Okay,
plus or minus 45 seconds.
So hold on a second. That actually wasn't that bad. The mechanisms in the decks that you were using, and I don't care what deck it was of that era, it was better because the first edit systems that I was working on was Sony VO2600s, I believe. They were top loading U-Matic decks, and I kid you not, when you preview and edit, you would slip, you know, 5 to 15 frames, and then when you performed it, it would slip another 5 to 15 frames.
God.
And it was like, why preview? I just never preview. Just perform it, do it, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you, and I'm sure you knew as well, because you had done it so many times, you knew what would, you know, that the edit would work out.
Well, what was interesting is that those decks were so bad when I was starting, and I'm going to say this is like, you know, 84, 85, that I was just like, this is not functional. I am not doing, I will not use this deck. And I ended up, and there were better things available, just not to me. And so what I ended up doing for at least a decade is I did nothing but live broadcasting because it was instantaneous and everything was actually frame accurate. You couldn't get the people on the set to redo something, but, but yeah, I mean, I avoided editorial for a decade until the technology got to the point where it was accessible to me in my little world.
Mm-hmm. It had to make sense to you, basically. And you knew enough about what was out there to know what to avoid and what would drive you crazy.
And it was kind of frustrating because in that era, like, you know, the Quantel paint box came out and that was a big deal. And, you know, there were some cool things out there. I just did not run in the circles that had access to those, nor did I feel like it was attainable for me to go knock on those doors and say, hello, Mr. Man with the pretty Quantel paint box. Can I work for you? You know? So I just, you know, I did what was accessible to me. And I think there's probably a lesson in there and I don't know what it is, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's okay. I love learning about you as much as I'm sure your viewers will be somewhat interested about learning about me, but we've never really talked before. So I'm enjoying myself.
The jury is out there, believe me.
So
the Vidionics, let's talk about the Vidionics on this episode of the Final Cut Grill.
I love it. We should spend the whole episode talking about the Vidionics Directed Plus. Maybe this is like the thing that like brings them back. Like someone brings it back, like the digital Bolex or something.
I think we need a whole new podcast and you and I could host it. And we'll talk about the video gear of 20 years ago.
Oh my God, you can just drive a stake through my eye because that would be fun. It would be fun, but oh man, the memories of things just never working.
Yeah.
So what I did, my memory of it is first off that it was the first thing that I bought from something that was like Craigslist that was used. And it was an expensive piece of gear. It was called the Coastal Trading Post. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. And okay. I think this is a Florida-based magazine, or maybe North Florida. But I remember my dad taking me over to this guy's house who looked like a granddad. And when it came time to make the deal, my dad like walked out of the room and I turned into a salesman. I turned into a consumer. Yeah. Yeah. Basically I got the doe eyes going and I just said, you know, I think he was trying to sell it for $350 and I said, but I only have $250. Would you be willing to do it for that amount? And he did it. So that was my first deal that I ever made. Yes. As a consumer, not as a salesperson.
But, yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
So that's how that all started. I mean, and the thing is that it was really me. What's important about it to me is that it was, well, life is still the same today. Still fighting to get the best price on gear because I'm self-funded. So it was an interesting beginning to it all. But it was me really wanting to do this and just looking at everything down to the bottom line in terms of how, you know, fighting my way to get the gear. Maybe that's the best way of putting it. You know, I would do anything. I would save every shekel I had to get the best gear that I could afford at the time and that I thought would work for me so I could go out there and make stupid little videos and hopefully one day move to Hollywood, California and do this for a living.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've described the commitment to purchasing gear is kind of like I may have vocalized this on one of the shows where you're standing next to a river and it's a hot summer day and the water looks really refreshing and you think, oh, I want to jump in the river because the river looks really refreshing. And you jump in the river and very quickly you realize, and that's the moment that you buy your first piece of gear. And you very quickly you realize that the current is very strong and it takes you down the river and around a bend and into a canyon that is filled with rapids. And for the rest of your career, you are going to be treading water and trying to keep your head above, you know, above the water.
Yes.
And it's just like, it's like you buy one piece of gear and you just say goodbye to so much of your life because it's it's a constant, never-ending rat race battle to stay on top. You know, some facilities back in the day, they would call it buy or die. You know, they had to keep up with whatever the next cool thing is. Now, granted, what we keep up with is a small pittance fraction of what they were trying to keep up with, but it is kind of the thing. So So how did you get so we're going to leave the Videonix switcher behind, yeah. And I think between the two of us we need to do a write up about it and put it on the blog here. But
that'd be awesome. So, yeah, I should find a picture
so,
of that.
So did you do Avid? Did you do, you know, when you got into digital editing, how did you get started?
Well, there was a lot of years between that and digital editing. Do you mind if I back up one sec? Because
yeah,
there is
sure.
one sort of pivotal moment.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like to talk about, which is, going back to my teen years, a friend of my father's was a news reporter at the local CBS station. And every once in a while, you know, he would do favors for us and like let me come in and just hang out and see what it was like on, you know, the 6 o'clock news, because they all knew this was something I wanted to do. And I got to sit with this editor. Whose name is Larry Dickerson, and he's passed away now a few years ago, but I'll never forget watching him cut news minutes before the news went on the air on his, he had Sony RME 450s at the time,
mm-hmm.
probably was cutting Betacam, regular Betacam or Betacam SP, I mean,
mm-hmm.
And I just, this was a pivotal experience for me seeing how fast he was working and also the timing. I think that's the thing that really stuck out for me was his timing, how he understood the sound of the gears of the decks and the way that he pressed the buttons and counted the seconds after someone would interview, and he knew where to duck down the audio, where the reporter would read live VO. And this was just, this was a really a magical experience, because everything was working and it was frame accurate and it was really cool. And I knew that this was one thing that I wanted to do. Not just editing, but in my entire career, but I knew I did want to do this as part of it.
I totally see what you're saying. I mean, it's that inspiration of seeing what could be, you mm-hmm. know? There's actually a word for that. Hold on, give me one second. This is very interesting. I was listening to a TED Talk the other day, and it is called The Subjunctive. And the subjunctive as a part of speech is like, should have, or could, it's a portion of the verb that allows you to imagine what if something was going to be different or, mm-hmm. or had been different. And it's, when you see that, it's really inspirational, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I get it. And I think that from a workflow standpoint, the way we work in this business is there are some people that they live in a bubble, you know, and this is the only way to work. And when you ask them why, the best they can tell you is, well, this is the way I've always done it.
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, that's fine, but have you considered thinking that there might be a different way?
Right.
Well, no, but this is the way I do it. Okay. Lack of vision. Let's reboot here. You know? And I think that having those moments like you had with this news editor, mm-hmm. I can remember the first time I saw a video production switcher in a video truck, and I was like, yeah, that's the thing I've imagined I needed all along, you know?
Right.
And it was like, oh, okay. And so those things do exist. Now I know where to steer my, you know, my ship, if you will.
Now you have a goal. Yeah, yeah. It's, even though there's film school and all that stuff, there's something to be said about learning by exploring on your own. And
yeah.
And a lot of times there isn't really someone to tell you that there's this specific type of switcher out there, or there's this way of editing or whatnot. I mean, you really have to do, you know, life is an experience, and it's fun to get out there and discover new things. And
you sound like your experience is very similar to mine. Did you go to film school or video production classes or?
Yeah, I did. So from Jacksonville, I made my way up to New York. I went to NYU and mm-hmm. I went to film school up there. And it was a great experience. I really enjoyed myself. It was sort of like, I ended up doing it in 3 years, which that was actually the biggest mistake, is that I graduated early. Just like, why not just enjoy your senior year? but I guess I guess I can thank myself now, because, you know, I didn't have that last year of college to pay down my debt, but
good point. Good point. Yeah.
So good and bad there, but it was a great experience. And, you know, I was a film school nerd and I loved, wanted to direct, but the editing suite was sort of where I blossomed and where people knew, like, that's what Michael knows how to do. And so I always sort of used that. My video class, I probably put my teachers through hell, or my professors through hell, because a lot of the stuff they were teaching I already knew, and I would make sure they knew that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I caught a little bit of that myself too.
Yeah. Did you go to film school?
I did not. I let me think. How can I tell the story briefly? I went to liberal arts school for nearly 3 years, dropped out. I actually chronicled this on my blog a little bit. I dropped out like right before finals my junior year because I wanted to learn more about video, because that's what I was spending all my time doing and my classes were suffering. And so then I tried to get into San Diego State because they had a great broadcasting department.
Nice.
Broadcasting, not filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not. The guidance counselor, she left in my face when she looked at my transcript. She goes, oh, there's no way you're going to get in here. Mm. And so, but then what I found out was that right near my house was a local community college that had probably the second best broadcasting department in the whole state of California, 40, 60 million people, whatever it is. And it was right near my house, where my parents lived, rather. And so I moved back home with mom and dad, and they were very accommodating and said, you know, follow your dream, learn what you want to learn, and, you know, live here, you know, for whatever it takes. And for the next 3 years, I guess it was, I was able to totally focus and concentrate and not worry about making tons of money and not worry about taking tons of units. I only took the classes that I really cared about. And when eventually it got to the point where I was doing so much work for the station that was in our college, because there was a PBS affiliate down the hall, literally.
Oh.
And I was doing so much work at the station down the hall, I would always be bopping into, you know, class in the afternoon and go, hey, George, I'm not going to be here for class today. And finally one day he was like, hey, you know, you got to make a decision here. Do you want to be a TV guy or do you want to be a student? And I said, it's been nice knowing you.
Yep.
You know, and hence, you know, there's the second time I dropped out. So I'm a 2-time college dropout and been muddling away, you know, doing this stuff for 30 years. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it beats work. I always tell people, I go, well, you know, it beats working every day for a living. So let's talk about Final Cut 10. What was your first exposure to the application?
My first exposure was watching the video from NAB.
Right. Like, and were you concerned? Were you excited? What was your take on it?
I'm going to be completely honest here.
Sure.
I was shitting bricks. Shitting bricks.
So did you fall into the, it looks like iMovie Pro camp?
I was in the, holy crap, my career is over in Final Cut and do I need to learn Avid? Like, I just, how am I going to use this? I don't understand what this is.
Okay.
And I really, had no idea what to do next when I saw that. I thought, well, am I going to have to go out and learn Avid? Premiere isn't up to snuff. It was complete confusion.
So did you then download it on day one, or were you just still moping in the corner?
I downloaded it on day one, and I called my friend over, my friend Mike Nichols, who's a big FCP7 editor, and we came up through FCP7 together. And I was like, let's just open the app up and start learning it and see what's going on here.
Okay.
And it crashed a lot, and it was not a good day, and we didn't know what we were going to do. And so that was my intro to Final Cut. And so,
So did you then like fall back and keep cutting in Final Cut 7 and sort of watch it with one eye like a lot of us did?
That's exactly what I did. Yeah.
So when did you come around to taking another serious look at it?
When I realized that Final Cut 7 was going to be deprecated. Eventually.
Right.
I said, okay, I need to learn this. And there's something here that I need to basically when Final Cut Pro, when I heard that it was deprecated, is when I realized, okay, I do need to learn this app because Premiere, I'm rambling here. The thing is that I would have continued using it had it been stable. You know, those real early 10.0, 10.0 ones really crashed a lot. So anything I started in it would crash on me, and sometimes, and I couldn't undo things. I just literally couldn't work in it. I couldn't learn it if I wanted to.
Right.
So I stepped away and said, I'll just keep an eye on the blogs, and when it seems to start to get ready, I will jump back in because I need to figure other stuff out right now.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I don't think I remember it crashing early on, but then again, I didn't really touch it again till like 10.03.
That's around the time, I would say 10.04 for me is when I jumped back in, and it was much more stable.
Right. So 3 brought us multicam and 4 brought us stability after multicam.
Okay.
Yeah. So so let me just ask you this, because I know that there's a lot of Avid editors or Premiere editors that mm-hmm. would be listening to this and going, dude, why don't you just pick up Avid? It's the way to go. Well, why didn't you?
Because I just don't like Avid, and I have the ability to make those choices in my company and in the work that I do. And there's just something about it that I just don't like the way it works. And respect to everyone else in the entire television industry uses it, and I get it. But I like to work. I have this style I like to call working at the speed of thought. And mm-hmm. I can do that. I could do that in Final Cut 7. And jumping forward, I can now do that in Final Cut 10.
Right.
And for me, for some reason, that mode shuts off when I go into Avid. Things become very stilted and turning tracks on and off the way you do in Final Cut in Avid versus you would in Final Cut 7 is very different, and a lot of it is because I don't know the app very well. I'd say I know it enough to be dangerous, literally dangerous. like, don't hire me for an Avid job.
Right.
But there's just something antithetical to the way I think. And this is getting into the art for it for me. I mean, I'm a business guy, but there is an art to it, and it's just not the way I think.
Yeah, you know, I've said this many times, but I owned an Avid very briefly in the late 90s, and it fought me for 3 months, and finally I got rid of it. I sold it at a giant loss, financial loss, and I actually at that point I moved on to Media 100 before I went into Final Cut. But yeah, I know the thing. And there are some people that, you know, they live and breathe it, and I get that, and I fully respect those people. And I know that a lot of the things that I watch on television have been cut in Avid. I get that, and I have no problem with it. It just didn't work for my mind, and I think I totally understand what you're saying there.
Yeah.
So then in Final Cut 10 world, what were the things that excited you as you started to learn it?
I would say, you know, there's lots of things that started to excite me. One of the ones was when I realized that I was actually working faster in it than when I was working in Final Cut 7. And I know a lot of people say that, but it's true. But it was little things like, you know, instead of uploading to FTP, I was finding that I was uploading my videos at the end of the day to Vimeo, and I could just walk away and just have it do it. I didn't have to wait for it to export and then set up the upload.
That is a really interesting comment. Nobody has mentioned that you're using the share menu using the Vimeo output.
Mm-hmm. So, and that was what I'm being completely honest here, because I'm a Final Cut 10 guy now. Like, this is how people know me.
Right.
Like, they used to know me as a Final Cut 7 guy.
Right.
I'm totally made fun of the whole share to Vimeo, share to YouTube. No, everyone uses it now, and it's amazing, and the compressions look great, and it's easy, and it works, and it's password protected, and my clients love it, and no one has an issue with codecs or anything like that. So yeah, they knew what they were talking about added that.
So riddle me this, Batman. When you do the share to Vimeo, is what codec is it uploading?
H.264.
So it does an H.264 compression. I know that there's a folder that it hides it in now in the in the 10.1 libraries. Yeah. So it hides a version there, and it's doing an H.264. Now, do you get to diddle fiddle those control those compression settings, or does it just do it for you?
You've got a diddle and a fiddle, meaning you've got, I think, like a high compression and a low compression, or like a single pass and a two pass.
Okay. Okay.
And then you can set the size if you want it to be as low as 480 and as high as 1080.
Yeah. In our office, you know, we have a custom PHP system that we've designed and built and frankly spent a lot of money on. But we have thousands of videos on it, and we have our own servers and a server farm and et cetera, et cetera. But I do notice that a lot of people are using Vimeo and the password Vimeo Pro thing. That's actually a really cool thing, what you're saying there, that you can actually export straight to your Vimeo account, correct?
Yes. Yes. It's just straightforward and simple, and I don't have to use the web interface. The same thing goes for YouTube. And with the 10.1 update, they added a couple more switches so that, you know, you can set it to like an unlisted video on YouTube, where I don't think you could do that before. Or, oh, you know what it is? You can actually set the password within Final Cut for Vimeo, and you couldn't do that before.
Oh, cool.
Because what I would have to do is then go online after it finishes compressing on Vimeo and set the password. So yet another step I just don't have to worry about now. It's a real set it and forget it type of thing, as long as my internet connection works when I leave at the end of the night. But yeah, if it doesn't, then I would have a problem doing it at the office anyway. So,
so yeah, good point. So obviously that's a cool feature, but I don't think that's enough to really make somebody want to like walk away from their Avid.
Sure.
What else did you decide that you were enjoying about it?
So I'm not going to have like a, this is the moment. There's it, and I know that may be what you want. And
no,
I do have an aha moment, which I actually posted today on Vimeo. There was an aha moment about the magnetic timeline.
Tell me.
There was I was posting some questions on the Creative Cow, and one of the questions was like, I don't understand why I can't, you know, make cuts in music like I do in Final Cut 7 and do overlaps, and when I want to do an overlap, everything goes out of sync when I do an insert shot, and I have to blah 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 blah. So someone answered, did you know that you can join the two clips together in a secondary storyline and then double click on them, and that expands the audio as if it was like an audio video clip. And then you can, take the audio on the B side and slip it under on the A side, do a J cut or an L cut.
Right.
And that was my moment where I got the magnetic timeline. And it was like, oh, I can do what I want to do. Oh, and this makes it better, because now when I do my music cuts, and I don't have to worry about turning tracks off.
Right.
And that was the moment where, you know, see the reverse effect of your life going back to the NAB, you know, video and watching how he, you know, was it Randy Ubelos who was using the magnetic timeline and making it work, and my brain going, oh, that's how it works. Oh, I get it now.
Right.
Oh, it's really, I actually like this a lot.
I totally get that. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of times where people, you know, we've talked about this on the show that, you know, it was really fun. Everybody loves to kick the champ when he's down, you know? And when it looked like Apple had made a mistake, so many people jumped on the, oh, you know, iMovie Pro bandwagon. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to complain about the things that we don't like or that don't work right. And, you know, I don't know if you caught it, but we did a great episode with Scott Simmons. And we called it 10.1 breakdown, where he talked about all the things he liked, and then the 10.1 beatdown, where I gave him like 45 minutes. Tell me what you don't like, Scott. Tell me what's next. What's next? And you know, there are those things, but there are so many things that if you just toggle your brain just a little, not a complete reversal, not a complete 180, but just change your focus from, you know, a heading of 000 to, you know, 002 or something like that. And all of a sudden you go, oh, that, I get that now.
Yep.
And there are some people that, like, you know, can't stand the magnetic timeline, but I'm here to tell you there are times when I just want to, oh, I wish I could just turn that off. But yes. 98% of the time, it makes me work faster.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it seems – and the thing is you only – we only tend to remember the bad things. It's almost like internet forums. You know, like everybody goes on the cow and says, this thing doesn't work right. Nobody ever goes on and says, wow, I just had the greatest day editing in X because Y worked wonderfully and now I'm done with Z.
Right. Well, that's what my blog is for.
Cool.
That's what I've noticed. Everyone likes to shoot off on their blogs and, you know, show off their jobs and stuff. So, but yeah, I agree. There's a lot of negative chatter out there, and there's a lot of people who are just stuck in 2.5 years ago. And I get how they felt back then because honestly, I was one of those people. But you just have to spend some time in it and do real jobs and test stuff out or do you know, little personal projects, which is what I did.
I was gonna ask you, what was the first thing that you cut in it and how did that go?
Well, I started a job in 7 and then I used Philip and Greg's 7 to 10 to move over a project to see, first off, what would it look like? That's what one of the things that was really interesting about their app is. So, okay, so this thing translates Final Cut 7 into Final Cut 10. So what does that look like now? What am I going to be looking at every day for the next 10 years? And it was a real guidance in terms of figuring out how to set up the magnetic timeline. It was my entryway into that. And I did a documentary for KCRW, kind of a newsy documentary piece about the record scene. It was called On the Record, LA Vinyl, that I did with a friend and news producer, Saul Gonzalez, and I cut a lot of news pieces for him as well. So that was a really fun artsy piece. And that was also, sideline here, which is that, you know, after Final Cut came out and I was kind of re-engineering my career and I purchased my Panasonic GH2, my first camera I'd purchased since my XL1 back in 2000. And I had long gotten rid of the XL1 and I had decided that I wanted to get back into shooting. So I shot the documentary as well too. So it was a real learning experience figuring out how the heck do I log in this app? What is the right way? You know, markers don't really work for me. Keywords are sort of working, but how do they work? And really it was trial and error on jobs. And now I would say because of jobs like that, I have a system now. But that system still changes. I'm still learning new things in the app and new ways and in collaborating with other people and finding out what it is that they're doing is really inspiring. And the exciting thing now for me is that there are these new ways to edit and cut. And I have to admit, you know, as much as I bitched and moaned when it first came out, I had been working with a client for 8 years and I remember just being in the twilight zone, my eyes crossed at the end of the day. I was so tired of hitting the same key combinations every day for years. And I did have thoughts well before Final Cut 10 came out that, boy, I would love to be able to do this differently. And I got my wish. And so it is exciting now to work in a different way. And I think that it did actually, I was so staid in my ways that it has sort of re-engineered my brain a little bit. You know, I've created some new pathways there, which means hopefully I won't get Alzheimer's when I'm 76. Maybe I'll get it when I'm 78. So
yeah, you'll just
so Final Cut is staving off to Alzheimer's by 2 years.
You'll have to learn a new edit system every 5 to 10 years.
That's right. Though God help me if I do again. But
so I want to talk about some. I always love this question about like how to I'm getting more curious about the way specific people work. So I'm just going to kind of take a tour around the UI and ask you a few questions.
Sure. I've got it open right now.
Okay. Actually, you know, maybe I will. Let me see if I can find that thing, that app. It's so funny. You know, people might think that I'm sitting here staring at it all day long, and I rarely have it open when I'm talking about it. It's quite interesting. So I want to talk about – first, let's talk about the library with 10.1.
Sure.
What did that mean to you? What did that do for you?
Oh, that was great. That really simplified my workflow because now I can just put everything into one bucket, and that bucket can be organized and sorted in the same ways as before, and I can close that bucket at the end of the day or when I want to open a new project up. It's really as simple as that.
So do you import your media into the library or do you leave it in place?
Oh, I answered that question on it was either Facebook, one of the forums, or on the Cal the other day. It depends on the project for me. If I know I have a little Thunderbolt drive that I take home with me,
right?
And if I have my media in two places, if I also have a larger Thunderbolt lessee RAID. So if I know I want to come back to the office and work on that, then I will not allow Final Cut to manage the media. However, if I'm just working on one drive and I know that's just where it's going to live, then I let Final Cut do it. And to be honest, it simplifies my workflow because when I want to like import music or graphics, I just drag it into the library and I don't think about it.
So actually, you're going to teach me something here. So you say you just drag it into the library. Do you mean you import it into the library from within the Final Cut user interface?
Oh, well, actually, I shouldn't say I drag it into. I don't know if you can drag into the library. I'm actually going to pull a clip in right now, but you can drag it directly into an event.
Right. Okay. And, yes. And so then in your preferences, if you have, let me think, in the import tab, if you say copy files into current library or whatever library, so right. Then wherever it started on the desktop or whatever drive it's on, you're going to mm-hmm. now make another copy of it and it's going to flow it into the new Final Cut 10.1 library.
Yes, exactly. So I work in a multitude of ways and it really depends on the project. If I was working on a project with four editors, then I would definitely leave the files in place. I have a system set up for that where I've got an O1 projects folder and then within that I've got folders with more folders within that, with footage folders and documents folders and approvals folders and transcodes folders. And so, you know, each job has its own specific method of working.
So because I'm a total folder nerd, would you be willing to take a snapshot of your folder structure and share it? That would be great.
Absolutely.
I'd love to put that on the website.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think watching, looking over people's shoulders, you know, digitally or, you know, virtually is a really great way. I think it inspires people to think about keeping more organized. And I think that a more organized editor becomes a more efficient editor. And even though it mm-hmm. may not seem fun and sexy in the beginning, as you get to the end of the project, it is going to save your bacon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to be OCD. To do this job successfully.
Yeah, it's astonishing the number of files that you generate in order to do this.
Yeah, and that's what Final Cut's all about. I mean, yeah. It's, you know, it's a file. It's a media manager at its heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I got to say, I always work with leave files in place, and I'm going to give you a good instance of why. One of the tutorials that I did recently was how to make a virtual link, if you will, between your Final Cut, your After Effects renders mm-hmm. and your Final Cut project. So here's my story. This is how I do it.
All right.
I do, because I have so many keyframes invested in After Effects, I do tons of stuff in After Effects. I just do. I do a lot of stuff in After Effects. Mm-hmm. Down to something as simple as a lower third. To me, it's, I live and breathe and think it. It's just easier to do that. So let's say I make something that I'm going to key over my video in After Effects. And I'm going to make an anim render file with an alpha channel, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Now, I take that thing and I render it into, I actually have a folder called anim renders. So everything that gets rendered out of After Effects goes into there. But okay. What I've started to do is put a subfolder in there. And that subfolder is called render to here. Okay. Now, let's say I make a name key, you know, Michael Garber editor. Mm-hmm. Render it. It renders to here. Mm-hmm. And then I tab over to the finder and I drag it out of that folder into the root of my anim renders folder. From there, I drag it into a keyword collection called anim renders. From there, I drag it onto my timeline, I'm all good to go. Problem is, I thought your name was a baby food and not rhyming with Garber, so I typed it Gerber, and now I have to fix it. That was good the way I came up with that so quick, right?
How dare you? How dare you, sir?
There you go. So now I tab back over to After Effects. I change the E to an A. I re-render. Where does it go? Render to here.
Back into the folder.
Now, once I'm in the Finder again and I drag it out of that folder, the Finder will allow me to overwrite that file. After Effects will not. After Effects, even if I tell it to name it the same thing, it'll say, yeah, no, you can't do that. No, no, you can't do that. But if I render to the empty render to here folder, I can always render it. And I don't change the name. Now, I drag it out of render to here into the root of my AnimRenders folder. And the Finder will go, hey, dude, you already got one. And I go, yeah, cool, overwrite.
Yeah.
Now, I tab back to Final Cut. It's already there.
There you go.
Because Final Cut is always referencing the file that I left in place, right? And so it is just going to go, oh, new file, yeah, whatever, and it updates it. Now, here's what happens. When you upgrade Final Cut Pro, which you do all the time because they are always coming up with updates,
right.
I think it toggles that thing back to copy into library. And there's been a few times where one of the systems has gotten accidentally switched over to copy to the library, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, my thing's not working. And so when you do your, you know, find in Finder, you realize, ah, this is now stuck in the library folder.
Right.
And so if you allow Final Cut to pull stuff and put it into the library, you can't do my little trick with the After Effects files.
Right.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that works with any file. Any file that you're referencing from the outside, if you need to modify a photo, I have a photo, oh, the dude's got red eyes. I can fix it in Photoshop, save it back in place, go back to the Finder, go back to Final Cut, and it's already been updated.
That will work with Photoshop files. I can't say with After Effects files, but that will work with Photoshop files if Final Cut is managing the files.
Exactly.
You can, if Final Cut is managing the files, meaning it's in the library folder or package, you can reveal the PSD in the Finder and then open it in Photoshop and edit it, and it will update. So
wait a second. Are you saying that the PSD is in the library?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
If you're allowing Final Cut to manage your files.
Right. That's very interesting. Yeah, because
that will work.
But that's because you're actually saving. That file came from within the library.
Right.
Yeah, I've always shied away from...
I agree. In your workflow, you should not allow Final Cut to manage the files. I think it's much better the way you're doing it. And my feeling is that's the whole purpose of this version of Final Cut, is that it works in a shared post-facility environment really well. And it also works in a mom and pop shop where you've got somebody who, you know, wants to just cut together a quick little video for their website. I mean, it really is totally scalable. And that's a good thing. I am not negative about that at all. I think it's great that they've been able to fill the market from the top, down.
I think the other thing is that the 10.1 feature set offers so much flexibility. So speaking about that, have you gotten into, I don't even know how to verbalize this. Have you gotten into the sharing of XML files?
Yes.
I have not experimented with that, where you basically what you would have, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have a central storage area, which could be just an attached hard drive using gigabit Ethernet. So you have all your media in one spot, and then you have two separate library files, one on the local machine, one on the remote machine.
Right.
And by remote, I mean gigabit Ethernet away. And then by sharing XML between those, like you can export a tiny XML file, toss it over to the other guy, he imports it, and he all of a sudden gets your cut of the timeline, correct?
That is correct. That should work.
I have not messed with that. I will say that back in the old Final Cut 7 days, I used to do exactly that with one job folder, all the media in there to project files, because those project files were not like the project files that we have now. They were basically almost like an XML file. It was just a pointer file. And then what I would do is I would save my project at a given time. I would duplicate the project. It might be, you know, 5, 10, 20 megabytes. Rename it with I'd append the second editor's initials on it and just say, reach across the network, open that, and cut me the first 2 minutes of the piece because I'm working on the tail end. And when you're done, I'll open up yours and import it, you know, copy and paste your 2 minutes of timeline onto mine.
Yeah, it was I would say it was a very simple workflow back then, and they have reworked Final Cut now so that it can work more like that. Another thing you could do, other than exporting XML, is that you could say copy just the project into its own library, like create a new library and just copy the project into it, as long as as long as the Final Cut wasn't managing the files to begin with. I don't believe that it will copy the files into the new library. And as long as that's turned off, then you could send that library over to the other editor as well. They could open that up and then drag that project into their current library. It's actually a little easier with the XML, but in the event that there are ever any issues with the XML, with something not going over, you know, I'm not saying I know of an issue with it, but if there were, I always like to have a backup plan. That's another way to do it. So,
right. And again, getting back to the theme, the new 10.1 feature set just gives us so much flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. You know what it is? That's what I was lacking when Final Cut first came out. I didn't have backup strategies when something didn't work. And in 7 and previous generations, there were all these other methods of doing things. And you just always sort of knew what those were, because if you had broken it and you had fixed it. If you got from Final Cut 1 to 7, like I had, you knew how to break it and fix it. And I hadn't broken Final Cut yet. And that was one of my processes to learning it, is that, and I knew this at a certain point. I said, you know, I have to get in there and break it. I have to find everything wrong with it, and I have to find every workaround that I possibly can, because I want to know 10 as good, if not better, than I knew 7. And, you know, and I feel like that's where I'm at right now with it. And one of the good things is that there isn't a big need for workarounds in it. There are some. But in general, in terms of workflow, in terms of importing media and editing into the timeline and working in the most basic sense, I do not have any real workarounds. I just have preferences in the way that I work. So,
right. So what do you see on the horizon? Like, for example, my new kind of nerd passion is I want to embrace the metadata more. I don't know if you heard the episode I did with John Chappelle, I think is now, from Digital Rebellion. And the whole reason I contacted him and said, hey, I want to talk to you, is I'm trying to sort of embrace the, you know, the world of metadata more. What's on your horizon for parts of the application that you want to, you know, dig a little deeper into?
Terms of where I'd really like to work on a heavy effects based project and see how that works. Something where effects are changing all the time and we're versioning, and I want to know, should I use auditions or should I just delete versions of effects from a timeline? And what if I have to composite something really quickly and getting that to and from After Effects or to whatever, you know, program the effects person is using on a daily basis. I'd like to do one project with that, get a big project like that under my belt so that I know what it's like and I can develop my workflows for that.
You know, you just made me think of something. I'm going to try something here. So I'm selecting a clip and I match frame back into the browser, which I had been complaining last week was not working well. It seems to be magically working better right now, and I don't know why.
Are you on 10.1.1?
I am on 10.1.1.
Good, yeah.
So I've now made an audition of the clip on top of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I am now going to do a basic colorize on one version of it, And then, very cool. I just realized you can audition different effects, not just different shots.
Mm-hmm. So you can also audition different compound clips.
Okay, so for people that don't know the word, because one of the things that Final Cut 10 has done is they've made us capitalize the word audition. I used to use the word audition just for, you know, show me another version. Audition is now a feature. Go ahead and explain what auditioning is.
Well, auditioning allows you to try out multiple shots in a timeline without having to stack them, which is really good for the magnetic timeline because of the way that it's designed. It can get a little visually complicated when you have lots of different layers. And it's also a way to really simplify choosing different shots. So recently I was cutting a news piece where the newscaster was reading to camera and he did a bunch of different takes. And I just selected all those different takes out of the same shot, because you can select multiple ins and outs at the same time, and I added those all to an audition. Put it in the timeline, and I just kept auditioning the shots. And when he came in to view the cut, and he said, "Where's that cut where I said this?" And I said, "There wasn't a cut where you said that." And he said, "Prove it to me." And I didn't have to go back to the original footage.
That's awesome.
I just control right.
Yep.
You know, was able to show it to him. So.
Actually, I found a cool feature just while you were talking there. So if I right click on a clip that's already in my timeline, there is nothing that comes up that says audition as an option. However, if I go up to the the clip menu, and I go to the audition flyout menu, one of the things I can do is duplicate as audition, or I believe it is
Control-Shift-Y.
It's like, which is the one that has the little diagonally thing? It's not Shift. It's not the Apple key.
Option?
I believe it's option Y will duplicate as audition. Let me try this.
I'm doing that too.
Yep. It duplicates the clip as an audition. So then you can apply your cool black and white effect to one version, but you can audition the full color one if somebody wants to see it in color.
And these are really cool things. And these are things that we have to discover for ourselves and decide whether or not we want to use it and how we would use it. And that's what's exciting about this time right now. There's a lot of... You know what it is, Chris? I'm in a constant process of reverse engineering my edits. I'm thinking about the final product, and I'm going backwards in the process and thinking of how did I get there, and how can I improve on that with Final Cut 10?
Can I do that in you know, spending a half hour less or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. And I just put a lot of thought into it. This is what I think about when I'm driving home from work or whatever. Like,
nerd.
Nerd. Yes, proudly. Big old stupid Final Cut nerd that I am.
So the keyboard shortcut of the episode, that's going to have to be a new feature of the show, is option Y. Select a clip in the timeline, option Y. Oh, actually, and another one that somebody tweeted me today. I was talking with Brian Russell the other day, and we were like kvetching over the fact that you can't show in Finder from the timeline.
Uh-huh.
Select the clip. Option Shift R, and it'll take you to that. Command Shift R. Command Shift R.
Yeah. What are you trying to do?
To show in Finder from the timeline.
Oh, yeah. Command Shift R.
Now it's not working. Is it?
It won't work from that audition.
It won't work from a synchronized clip either.
There are some limitations.
Yep, that's okay.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you how to do it.
Oh.
Go to your keyboard. Command palette.
Okay.
Type open in timeline.
Nerd, hold on. I'm now in mouse and I'm in the Finder.
I'm a keyboard junkie.
Do you remap a lot?
Not a lot, but I add when there are free keys, I'll map stuff to those keys. I try to keep everything else the same.
Open in timeline?
Yeah, and then change it to option T.
Okay.
And then when you're done with that, go back to the timeline, hover over the synchronized clip with your mouse, hit C, option T, and then C again over the video clip, and then Command Shift R, and there you go.
Okay, so I'm on my synchronized clip now. What do I hit first?
C to select.
Oh, okay. I hit C to select it, and then option T. and then C again, or Command Shift R.
You can just hit Command Shift R, yeah, because there's just one clip on the timeline, and there you go. That's how you get back to it.
Ah, clever.
Yeah, I don't know if there's still an issue with.
Right now, people listening to this are pulling over the side of the road and jotting these down in their memo pad on their iPhones.
Awesome. I want everyone to use these.
Drive safe, people. We will not have a car accident because of the Final Cut grill.
So I'm making an audition now, and I'm selecting it, and I want to see if Match Frame. Okay, good. Match Frame works with auditions now. I think there was an issue with that before, but I'm not going to confirm that.
Yeah, if we follow the upgrade path of 10.0 and we fold that forward onto 10.1, we can pretty well be certain that there will be a 10.02 very quickly, because as it turned out, the odd ones were the cool new features and the even ones were the bug fixes. and I will say that I'm experiencing some little sniggly bugs in 10.1.1.
Okay.
Yeah, just some like render things, like the render gets into a render loop thing and it goes, 0, 100, 0, 100, 0, 100, 0, 100, 0, 100. Or,
I noticed that the other day, but I opened it up and it was generating audio waveforms. I opened up the background task.
Yeah, all you got to do is click on that little...
The 100% and that, or the number that's moving up, yeah. And it's a command 9 is
9,
the...
9, yeah. You beat me to it. I knew that key. I knew that one.
sorry. I'm not trying to show off. I can't stop myself.
I think what we got to do is we'll do another Google Hangout sometime, and we'll have like a we'll invent some sort of a game show where we have people try and remember the keyboard shortcut or something like that. I think in summary, I think the thing that I think is very telling in this application is this: in the beginning, you will want to hit your head against the table a couple of times. And that's what we call the learning wall. You've probably heard me say that before, as opposed to a learning curve. It's like, that first 24 hours can be really painful.
Right.
But when you get past that, you begin to find you'll get to a point where you're like, okay, now I'm where I was. But then when you dig just a little bit deeper, then you start seeing, and this is getting back to that subjunctive verb that I referenced earlier, you find out what can be, and you start looking at that audition thing and you go, wow, I did not realize I could audition multiple color corrections on that.
Right.
I can audition the same clip, not just different takes of a clip, but I can take that shot and do the option Y now. I think we figured out it was. And I now have another copy of that exact same set of frames that I can color correct differently.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the many things that I'm beginning to see, that there is, like, I'm already to the place where I can do everything I used to do in Final Cut 7. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking at it and I look at this application and I go, you know what? It still has legs. There's so much more that I can learn to be smarter, faster, more efficient, and ultimately, when you take all that together, you end up being more creative.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much for sharing. How do people find out more about Michael Garber on the internet?
You can go to my blog, garbershop.com, and you can email me at michael@garbershop.com.
And you're on Twitter too, right?
Yeah, @garbershop.
Perfect.
It's a good name.
It is. Yeah, I love
it. I'm really proud of that one.
It works. Hey, Michael, thanks for sharing, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So that was Michael Garber. I hope you enjoyed listening to that chat as much as I had talking with Michael. Fascinating guy. Certainly he will be back. He's got some really good insight, and it was really fun. I don't know if you caught at the end there, kind of going back and forth, sharing the keyboard shortcuts. If you're into keyboard shortcuts like I am, and apparently Michael is, it's a bit of a game. We will, like, oh, but did you know this? And anyway, that's kind of fun. So, again, go to the show notes. Go to the show notes on the Digital Cinema Cafe website. Click on the Final Cut Grill button on the left-hand side. And I've posted some of the keyboard shortcuts we've talked about and some other stuff, links to things that Michael mentioned. So that's it for this episode of Final Cut Grill. Thanks for listening. As I mentioned, there will not be a show this Monday, but we'll be back next Friday. Later, later. Now, let me stop this recording.